People to go. Wow. It is Nathan Skinner Show. I'm Nathan Skinner. Two things that I know for sure. I know those two things for sure. The rest I'm not so sure about after watching the AIG hearings all day. I've been riveted by these hearings all day. We have plenty of sound coming at you from them. We're processing even as we speak. And I have lots of so many different angles on all of this. It's sort of mind-blowing, if you will. 866-991-9927, first of all. That's the number to the program, 866-991-9927, if you haven't been glued to your television all day watching congressional hearings. And the testimony of Ed Liddy, who is the acting CEO of AIG. President Obama made some early remarks before getting on a plane to California, where he's doing a town hall, in fact, trying to deal with this whole situation. But so what we're going to do is we're going to take a deep breath and rush to the studio, watching. So you'll get the bird's eye view. I'm watching the hearings. I'm recording on three different devices, okay, and cutting the sound up. Due to the timing of my show at 3 o'clock Eastern, the way we have to do things is, it's amazing. The way the sausage gets made around here, just so you know, and hope you appreciate it, I have three recording devices at home. So I'm two computers. And actually three computers off of three different streams, a video stream, the TV, and another thing. So I'm listening in one ear. I'm recording or taking notes on what's being said. I'm cutting and editing the sound I want to bring you about what's important for you to hear while I'm doing these other two things. Send them off to John via email. Rush in my car to get here to the studio to talk about it. So I'm processing it. I'm cutting up the sound. I'm thinking about it on the way here. Like, what is really going on here with the whole situation in this economy? And today was it. Today was, I think, if you really have been following this whole train wreck or 18-car pileup, here's my stupid analogy for the day. It's like I feel as if I've been in one of those 18-car wrecks where you've got your foot on the brake and you see it happening up way ahead of you, like miles down the road. Because I was on the TV and radio, but mostly TV and Fox Business Network and all the other shows out there saying, look at folks, look what's happening. Look what's going to happen with these credit default swaps so long ago. And here they are front and center in the economy. An instrument, something no one had ever heard of, really, is the poster child of what is threatening the global economy. Everyone, every country, everyone's jobs. And here's the guy testifying today. I mean, it's all just like emblematic. Here's the guy, Ed Liddy, who's testifying about why it is he gave $165 million in bonuses to employees of a company that received $170 billion in taxpayer funds. Now, so there are lots of different angles to this that I want to talk about. One is there is the implications of what he said, and I'll digest it, and we have some sound for you as well, but I'll digest it for you and regurgitate it for you of what his answers were to Congress. But the implications for our economy going forward today changes everything, really, I think, and given some statements that President Obama made today as well, that we can't keep going through, as he said, we can't keep going through this, the whole cycle of bubble and bust. And let's see, can we get that, John? Can you put my cut screen back up? We're doing things a little, we did so much so quickly today, so it may sound a little disjointed, and it is. That's okay. So where is it that you have President Obama? I think it was basically question number five. His question number five, he was asked about was it worth it to bail them out?
To be continued to be propped up going forward?
Right. Well, look. This can get pretty technical, but I'll try to simplify it. Last year, when the Federal Reserve decided to step in, again, that wasn't a decision that we made, but I actually think it was the right decision. AIG had insured a whole bunch of losses for a whole bunch of banks that had made bad bets on subprime loans and mortgages that had been packaged and bundled up and made into securities. These were massive insurance policies. Unfortunately, because of a lack of regulation, they were able to issue far more insurance policies than they could pay out on these various instruments that these banks had issued. And had AIG been allowed to simply liquidate and go bankrupt, all those banks who were counterparties with AIG would have experienced such big losses that it would have threatened the entire financial system. I want to repeat something that I said before the joint session. My interest is not protecting banks. My interest is protecting the American people. You know, the people's 401ks, ordinary folks who have a credit line with a bank for their small business, people whose pension funds are invested in some of these financial institutions. The prospect of all of that unraveling would have been unacceptable, an unacceptable risk. Now, what we're trying to do is get ourselves in a position where we make sure that going forward, we're not held hostage to all these bad decisions that were made by these huge institutions in the past, and that we create a system where they can't make all these bad bets, they can't issue these insurance policies one on top of the other without having the assets to back them up. That's the kind of regulatory reform that we need. That's what these folks are going to be talking to the folks on the Hill about, and I am confident that we can strike the right balance that allows our financial system to stabilize, allows people to innovate in the financial markets, but don't allow them to put everybody else's savings, everybody else's well-being, other people's jobs, other people's homes at risk. And that's the task that lies before us, and I'm confident we can get it done.
Well, that's why he's the president of the United States, because he just summarized the entire crisis and what we have to do, what caused the problem, why we had to prop up AIG, and how things are going to have to change in the future for everybody. And he did it in 3 minutes. 866-991-9927. Again, what we heard today, we're hearing during these hearings. The reason, as the president said so well, is that if we didn't prop them up, we'd have to liquidate them, okay? That would, in effect, hurt all the banks, okay, that they are partners with in this now interconnected system, which would undo the entire financial infrastructure for everybody, everyone, me, you, Main Street, Wall Street, credit for small businesses, everybody, savings, retirement assets. So we had to do it, is what he said. But look, in the future, when we get this right, we aren't going to redo this again. We aren't going to go back to some place like all these people that are on these shows saying, just let the market work itself out. Nope. We are going to have a whole new board game, okay? Because this has happened time and time again, as he said, this whole cycle of bubbles and bust. And it's the same folks, man, the SNL bailouts. We keep going after this. And there has to be a completely new set of rules for the financial system so that you don't socialize the losses of private enterprise. That's exactly what has happened. And we are held hostage. We, the American taxpayer, that we are being blackmailed by these folks, essentially. But we have no choice. We have no choice. That's what people don't get. So the polls are, the anger's rising. People are, you know, saying just let it work itself out or just let them fail. We can't. That's the short answer. And everyone has every right to be angry, and I understand that, and boy am I angry, because I had a front row seat for the whole thing. But also, this changes everything in terms of politics. There's an intriguing whodunit in here. Okay, that whole thing I brought up yesterday about who actually changed the rules to allow the retention bonus. There's more intrigue on that. There is so much going on with this AIG crisis that, We'll be sorting through this for a long time to come. Let's put it that way. 866-991-9927. More sound, more analysis on what this means for you and why you need to care about a guy named Ed Liddy on the Nancy Skinner Show. Go again, SNL crisis revisited with the banking crisis and a bailout and no lessons in between. I guess that's the way it's going. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-866-991-9927 is the number to the program. Riveting hearings. Maybe it's just me who's riveted by hearings on AIG. Maybe most people are like, dude, that's so boring. But it really is. How we got back to where we are, it's amazing. And how we're going to get out of this, the stakes are so high. People have no idea how high the stakes are for everybody right now as I watch this guy try to explain his way out of paying $165 million in retention bonuses to the unit of AIG, literally the financial products division, that caused the train wreck in the, well, yeah. Basically, it's emblematic of the train wreck in the entire economy. That's what's happening. And it's pretty good stuff. But I'm going to get a quick call. I know a lot of people on the line. 866-991-9927. Richard's in Los Angeles. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Nancy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Have you been watching any of these hearings?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I can understand this poor guy's dilemma because he's doing it only for $1 a year. He's not. He was appointed by the government to help, but that's not what I'm really angry about now. It was just reported on the Tom Hartman show that Chase Bank is taking $400 million and hiring Indian population over in India to get us out of this mess by helping Americans get stay in their homes. Why aren't they spending the $400 million and hiring Americans?
So, all right, because go back and say what the $400 million is being used for specifically?
To hire the Indian population who are IT techs to help us get out of this mess.
So they're going to a service center, a technical center, to do what? To help with the foreclosure plan, or what more specifically do you know
about
this?
To help keep people in their houses, to help people with their mortgages, to basically deal with the entire financial problems. And that's what was reported by the radio news media representative to Washington that comes on the Tom Hartman show about 8 minutes before the end of his show and before your show.
Well, I'll get it. We'll figure out exactly what the report is about Citigroup. It doesn't surprise me. We've been talking about this on the show. A lot of what Senator Conrad said yesterday, a lot of the people who got these bonuses, retention bonuses, were not American citizens. They were hired out of the UK. So that's what I'm saying. This whole thing, this is such a train wreck. The whole thing is just such a train wreck. And it's global in nature, and it's about greed. I think President Obama summed it up so well, and we have more of his statements on it. It's about greed run amok. I mean, that's the story. If you are writing the history books right now, it's greed gone run amok. And so I'm not surprised, or, you know, to me, that Citigroup would hire Indians. That's obviously been going on for a long time with these call centers. Oh, I guess I lost that call. 866-991-9927. Maybe he's mad because I wasn't sufficiently outraged. Nothing outrages me anymore. It outrages me, but it doesn't surprise me. Let me put it that way. Nothing is surprising to me to think that, it's Chase. It's Chase. I said Citigroup. Sorry. That Chase is doing that. No, not surprised by it, but it's the way it is. 866-991-9927 on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Exploring every possible avenue, as is Congress, to see what we can do. But what we need are tools that allow us not to find ourselves in a situation where we only have two options. One is to withhold money from AIG that could potentially lead them into a spiral that could affect the entire financial system. Or, on the other hand, having folks get bonuses and at least have the capacity to sue the government and get not only their bonuses but potentially even more out of the legal system. We've got to have tools that under our legal authority allows us to deal with these issues. That's what we're going to be striving for.
Wow, how would you like to be president of the United States now at this time with this mess to walk into? So glad I lost. Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927, the number to the program. We are in bizarro land here. President Obama, that was his statement about exploring all the tools, needing more tools, and exploring all options to deal with this situation with AIG. He was asked specifically, if you didn't hear the question, what can be done about these bonuses? People are focused on the bonuses that were handed out. So let me just try to quickly go through. If you haven't been following this as closely as I have, or many people are, here's essentially what happened. Here's the primer. Here's the global meltdown primer. Around September, when John McCain said the fundamentals of the economy are strong, and everyone knew otherwise, there was a lot of rumbling on Wall Street. Lehman went belly up. And so when Lehman collapsed, was allowed to collapse, you had, and I'll tell you what, the Bernanke is in big trouble right now from these hearings. There are a lot of folks in trouble right now. But Bernanke and Paulson realized they let Lehman collapse. And what happened was the markets freaked out. The markets tanked, stock market tanked, but they freaked out because they said, you know what, at the heart of it is the housing, yes, but there's all these exotic instruments. So the credit froze up. And so then they went back to the drawing board and said, okay, we can't do that. We can't allow these big firms to collapse because they're too interconnected. They're too big to fail to the whole global economy. So they start pumping money into companies like AIG, which is the poster child now. This is an insurance company. It's not a bank. It's an insurance company, as President Obama said, with a big hedge fund on top of it because all these things are now intertwined. So they come, and they're probably at this point $140 billion, a couple tranches of money, $140 billion is too huge to fail company, and, you know, just jaw-dropping sums of money. And then around March 3rd, I think it was, they wanted $30 billion more. So they're trying to just not let these too-big-to-fail companies fail so that they don't take Wall Street down with them. So what happened? So March 3rd, they want $30 billion more. And there's some discussions about preventing these bonuses. We still don't know. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. There was, and I'll play some sound for you, the chairman of the committee, Paul Jang, what's his name? I can't even, we'll get the name of, I'm watching this thing, I don't even know the chairman's name. We're learning more about who knew what and when. And he was questioning today Edward Liddy, who is the new, he's the acting chair of AIG now, after the deal was done, the bailout was done. He came out of retirement, he said, was at Allstate but was retired. Came out of retirement after the bailout to help guide this big monstrous company through this whole thing. So everybody's kind of giving him a pass. I'm not going to give him a pass after hearing his testimony today because of the decision he made. So anyways, he pays out $165 million in retention bonuses to the unit of AIG that initiated all these exotic credit default swaps, which are just complete insane trades anyways, as I've been saying for a long time now. So apparently he's only talking to the Fed, we learned today. He's talking to Bernanke. And the Fed isn't talking to the Treasury. So that's the flow of information was Bernanke knew a lot more than he told Geithner, okay, about these bonuses. And so he was the chairman of this committee, had a conversation with Ed Liddy, I think he said, and we'll start playing that sound when we get it all going, that he was told, look, we want these contracts eviscerated. We want you to go ahead and put that chairman up, cut John Chairman that one and play a little of this.
When we discovered that there were potential bonus payments about 2 months ago, we talked with each other. And I urged you to do everything within your power to see if you could suppress the payment of those bonus payments or deny them in their entirety. At that time, it was my understanding and the understanding of my staff that both AIG people and my staff on the committee would cooperate, would have a transfer of information and some documents to indicate whether or not there's any assistance we could lend in interpreting what positions AIG could take in regard to these bonuses. I think specifically, to make it simple, we wanted to see whether or not we could vitiate that contract. And when I say we, members of Congress and for the benefit of this committee. The disappointment and why you are here under these circumstances, Mr. Liddy, is that I warned you at that time that if these bonuses were paid and no mitigation was made to the general public of the United States or to this Congress, the action by AIG in doing that would jeopardize the second rescue plan that is anticipated and potentially needed to save the American economy. As of Saturday last, we had received no communication regarding the documents, papers, and facts that we had expected from AIG prior to payment. The only thing we received was a letter indicating that payment was made and that it was done on the basis of an attorney's or attorney's positions, that a contract was involved, and apparently they advised that no way around that contract could be found. Not to get an argument about it, I do want to render this opinion. In my prior life, I was an attorney, and I dealt with your prior insurance company that you were CEO of, and I won't mention the company because it's of no concern to anyone else. I'm sure everybody knows what large company that was. In cases that I had with your company, there were clear cases of the need for recovery or payment, and yet defenses were rendered and time was taken, and very often those cases had to go to trial. And that practice exists all over the
United States. Listen to this.
So
I think I said this was my initial reaction.
Thing
listen
of first impression.
2 days ago.
Sometimes insurance companies delay payment or take a position they will not pay until they were sued. In this case, there is an opinion in the land and in this committee reflected today that this was a rush to payment, that there were other alternatives at hand. One of the last alternatives would have been a denial of the right to pay on the contract and a simple word to these folks, sue us.
Did I not say sue us?
That is not a bad remedy in my estimation, and I hope you'll address
on Monday. That's what I
in
said.
Your statement today, and I've read your prepared statement. Insofar as if you had taken that position, these bonus recipients would have been in the same position as the taxpayers of the United States. They would have had to sue and wait until the resolve of whether AIG succeeds or not or go the distance of the suit would be 2 or 3 years. The worst that could have happened would be a penalty feature under the laws of the state involved. But if in the meantime an election were made to take AIG into bankruptcy or some other relief, those funds would not have been paid. Now, I indicated to you I thought that you were missing the gravity of the situation in terms of the American people were responding to they had enough. This was an unreasonable action on the part of AIG to pay these funds. So in your testimony today, I hope you address some of these ideas. And with no further assertion looking forward to the questions.
All right, so this was Chairman Paul Kanjorski, this guy. Who would have ever thought that a subcommittee meeting, the House Financial Services subcommittee meeting, could be so riveting? Who would have ever thought that? But it was. Basically what he said is, look, I told you, our last conversation, Mr. Liddy, was this, that you better find a way to get rid of those contracts because it's going to jeopardize any future bailout of AIG. And because AIG is so central to this global economy, the entire architecture, the whole financial architecture of the world. And if you pay bonuses, retention bonuses to these people when there was a $60 billion loss in this company, the anger is going to be such that we're going to have problems politically being able to even pass this if you do that. So the answer from Ed Liddy was this. He said, look, or he was supposed to get back to him. He never got back to him. They didn't hear anything. There was no further communication. So the chairman is assuming that these guys have amended these contracts, fixed them, whatever, decided they were going to put it up. What he was saying was, you're an insurance company. For God's sake, you screw people all the time. That's what you do. I mean, you tell people, sorry, sue us. We're not going to pay you. And now you're rushing to get these payments out to your people. Why didn't you wait? Why didn't you wait, knowing what damage this would cause? And the answer was, essentially, am I going to have time to give the answer? No, you're going to want me. I'm going to give the answer. I'll give the answer on the other side. Okay, I'm getting the thumbs up. We'll do that to you. We'll give you the answer to what Ed Liddy said. Why did you rush to make these payments? Why did you? You had time. Why don't you do what you all insurance companies normally do? Say, sue us. But no, you had to go rush those payments. You didn't communicate. You sent a letter back to us from your lawyer saying these. Well, I'm not going to give that away because I want you to stay tuned to the program because that's what we do. We call it a tease. 866-991-9927. And if you're on the phone, hang on. I got to bring a lot of people up to speed who aren't sitting around watching the riveting House Financial Services Subcommittee testimony today, as I was. Oh, better than anything they could pull off in Hollywood. And I'm going to tell you why and all the other whodunits that go along with it right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. Going to do 866-991-9927. That is the number to the Nancy Skinner program today. I am going to edumacate you about what's going on with the global meltdown and where this whole AIG mess, why it is the poster child of the global meltdown. Testimony by Edward Liddy. Before the break, here's the short thing, and I'm going to get right to your calls. The short story is, the big question is, why did you rush to make these bonus payments? These are retention bonuses, not, they weren't, as Ed Liddy, the new chair of AIG, said, not performance bonuses. They were retention bonuses that were paid to the financial products division of AIG, the division that handled credit default swaps, and, you know, which was the instrument that drove the company into the ditch, and therefore our taxpayer was on the hook for this, right? And his answer to that, and he didn't inform the committee, even though he had had a prior conversation about this. They just sent a letter from the lawyers saying we have to honor these contracts. And his answer as to why would you honor that contract? Why wouldn't you change those contracts when you took over this big company in September? His answer was the risk was too great that those people, if they did not get their bonuses, would quit. Wow. Are you kidding me? That the risk that they would quit was too much of a risk to pay, even though he knew, clearly the chairman, Kanjorski, said, you know, if you pay those, the outrage in the country is going to be such that we may not be able to come give you any more money to save you. And if we don't save you, we know that that could melt down the whole global, the whole infrastructure. But those people might quit in this economy. Honestly, like, you can't get other people to do stupid things that so many unemployed people on Wall Street. And that question came up again. Like, you didn't think that you could get other people out there? And he said, yeah. Yeah, of course there are a lot of talented people out there that we could get. But the risk was too great. That's why they did it. So let's go to Trish, who is out in Los Angeles, as I promised. Hi, Trish. You're on with Nancy Skinner.
Hi, Nancy. I'm so glad I got through. I'm a Detroiter as well.
Hi, Trish. We're glad to have you.
I live in Los Angeles, but I'm from Detroit. And, you know, I just want to say Detroit is a great city to be from.
Great. Where? What part of Detroit were you from?
Just over 8 Mile. I call it 8.5.
8 Mile. Everyone knows 8 Mile from the movie. Okay.
So listen, here's my take. You know, I think it's one big Enron out there. You know,
the whole big,
everybody, we're all getting played. And, and I feel like if you or I, screwed up our company, we would be fired.
Yep. Yeah, I would take it even a step further, Trish. This is more than screwing up a company and getting fired. This is another thing I said a couple days ago. This is fraud. There is fraud here. If you and I committed fraud, we'd be in jail, Trish. That's what's going on.
That's what should happen to all of these people, I swear. It's time for, you know, a new government to step in and just wipe the slate clean, just say, look, this whole thing has been orchestrated by minds that are capable of weaving such a tangled web that it would be impossible to untangle, to sort everything out. So, you know, we should just wipe the slate clean. But our elected officials are really showing what they're made of.
But wait, we just did. We just had an election in November. We have a new president. I mean, you can't, obviously, he's trying to sort this mess out. So.
Oh, man, I campaigned for Obama. I did. I love that he is absolutely like an intelligent human being and really seems to be in touch with everything that's going, you know. After George Bush, I mean.
All right. So when you say, though, you said wipe the slate clean, it's not, you know, in terms of the electoral fallout of this, here's what's going to happen. If we succeed in sorting this mess out, the financials of this, the New Deal, there's going to have to be a new deal. Okay. The new deal is that you Wall Street, you business tycoons, you who are so exalted from on high by the conservative ideologues who talk about the beautiful powers of the free market, the mystical, magical powers, you gotta shut up. Because listen, we're never gonna be allowed, this Ponzi scheme can never go on again. Cause that is essentially what it's been, is one big Ponzi scheme. And so the new rules of the road are gonna have to be laid down. And I'm sorry, we're gonna have to go back to those Depression era laws and re-put them in place. Banks can't own financial companies. Financial companies can't own insurance companies. The Glass-Steagall Act, that's the first act of Congress. If I were in Congress, that would be the first bill that had my name on it, is to put that in place. And then there's going to be a whole host of other bills that have to follow to re-regulate these entities. Because the deal is, it's not just them and us. When they play with that money, they're playing with all of our money. And so there's going to be a whole new deal. New deal. We'll keep talking about that. Take more of your calls. 866-991-9927. And there's just more intrigue going on, believe it or not, in this subcommittee hearing. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. Let's jump right back into this. Lots going on today. 866-991-9927 on the Nancy Skinner program. I'm Nancy Skinner. Okay, so if you're just tuning in, I'm trying to explain the best I can what happened today at the subcommittee on House Financial Services. I guess it's the subcommittee of the House Financial Services Committee, and they had a hearing with Ed Liddy, who is the new chairman of AIG, which has received something like $170 billion in bonuses to date. So, not bonuses, in bailout money. We've got so many things going on here. If you saw my screens and all the sound, everything we got going on here, it's popping my little brains out. All right, so there were hearings today. Congress has their first chance to really figure out what happened in the payment of the $165 million in retention bonuses that happened over the weekend. How did this happen? Why did it happen? If we own 80% of your company, dude, you've got a lot of questions. This was a hot seat to be sitting on. Here's one of the questions that was asked specifically. John, you ready for this on retention? And I don't even know who asked this question, but this was the specific question as to why we paid these people this money.
More than the top seven people at your organization received more than $4 million in retention bonuses, and the top individual got $6.4 million in individuals, and 73 employees got a total of $1 million, of $1 million each. Would these be considered to be key players, key figures in the corporation?
Not within the corporation, but within the unit known as AIGFP. So just to be clear, but the top people in the corporation are getting no bonuses.
But that's the issue. That's the group that went sour, isn't it? The financial services division.
And it got cut off right there at the very end. He said yes. that was the important part of the cut. Yes, that's where I cut it off. Go ahead.
Yes.
There you go. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Help me, Lord. Yes. All right. Do you get that? Do you get what you just heard? He is admitting that these were the key players that sank AIG. And AIG, if we don't prop it up, could sink the entire world economy. So that's why we had to give them retention bonuses, even though a number of them have left. Okay, so it's to retain them because the risk would be too good, as Ed Liddy tried to explain it, that if we didn't pay them those bonuses, that they would leave. They would quit, go elsewhere, and that would just be ruinous. But they did leave. Okay, none of this makes any sense. So Barney Frank, who is he, chairman of the banking? I mean, I guess the parent committee. He wants the names of people who got the bonuses. So let's go ahead and play this little exchange in which Barney Frank is asking Ed Liddy to provide the names of those people who received those bonuses.
Let me ask you this now, and you said some people are giving the bonuses back. I'm now asking you to send us the names of those who received bonuses who have not given them back. Can you do that?
Sir, I will if I can be absolutely assured that they will remain confidential.
Well, I won't give you that assurance, sir. And so if that's the condition, it would be my intention to ask this committee to subpoena them. And I would, this is a situation where there's a lot of public activity. I ask you to submit the names of the people who've received the bonuses, noting that they paid them back or not. And I won't accept them under a confidentiality personally. In fact, you submitted some confidential information, and I frankly threw it away after reading it because I was afraid I would inadvertently breach the confidentiality. But I do ask that you submit those names without restriction, and if you feel unable to do that, then I will ask the committee to subpoena them.
Congressman, if you'll let me explain, I very much want to comply with your request. I would hope it doesn't take a subpoena. If it does, then we will obviously comply with the law. I'm just really concerned about the safety of our people. So let me just read two things to you. All the executives and their families should be executed with piano wire around their necks. My greatest hope. If the government can't do this properly, we the people will take it in our own hands and see that justice is done. I'm looking for all the CEOs' names, kids, where they live, etc. You have a legitimate request.
Well,
I want to protect the well-being of our employees.
Could I get an additional minute by unanimous consent, because this is a subject to be addressed? I understand that. Many of us get these kinds of threats. Clearly, those threats are despicable. People who engage in this kind of threat, and I would say to my colleagues, the rhetoric can get overheated, so we ought to be very careful. That's why I want to be very clear, Mr. Liddy, that I disagree with the way you've handled this, but I understand that you inherited it. I disagree with the people who wrote those contracts, but it did not appear to me to be criminal. I will be willing to be guided to some extent by what the security officials may say, but this is an important public subject, and my guess is that there are probably threats aimed without too much specificity about people who work there. So I am going to keep that request on the table. I will consult with the law enforcement people, including the federal law enforcement people, and if they tell us they think there is a serious threat, we will have to take that into consideration.
Okay, so are you getting this now, folks? It's starting to pile on. They rushed the payments to the, in his own words, the key players, okay, that sank AIG. Now, when we want to know, we, the 80% owner of this company, AIG, when we want to know who got the bonuses, because we're 80% owners, Ed Liddy is saying, no, we, those names should be kept in confidence because of threats that were received. I heard Rush Limbaugh, honey bunny, Rush, I'm having a hard time saying that today, saying on the way over here that, all, you know, the, trying to defend that, that, that the level of confidence. Wait a minute. Those are our, you and I paid these people. Okay, so we own this company, and you're telling me we can't know the names of who that money went to? Of course they're getting threats. Rush Limbaugh said it must be the left-wing bloggers who are threatening them to execute them with piano wire, as Ed Liddy said. You know what? You know how many crazies are out there and threats that get leveled against people every single day in the public eye? So to say, to use that and honestly think that you can have some shield of confidentiality in terms of when $165 million taxpayer dollars went to these people. I'm not saying they get posted on the internet, but you're not going to hand them over to the chairman of this committee to investigate because of that? No, that dog won't hunt. 866-991-9927. Let's get some calls in here. I'm over the top. I am flush myself with anger, so I'm going to try and calm down a little, find my zen-like center, and in the meantime I'll go out to Culver City and speak with Jim. Jim can help me find my zen-like center at this very moment.
Well, sorry, Nancy, I am so outraged. It's beyond expression. I cannot see a contract which you get into which says even if we fail, we will get multi-million dollars as a reward. I cannot see that kind of contract could exist, but it may be. Let's see this contract. Let's also find out, I think this is massive insurance fraud. Why are we paying, rewarding people who engaged in massive insurance fraud, which have brought the whole world to a economic meltdown?
Right.
Why are we giving them a cent?
Because they might quit.
We don't need to retain them. We need to arrest them.
Amen, brother. Yes, that's how we get to our zen-like center. We just throw them in jail, go back to regular scheduled programming, correct? All right, thanks for that. You're supposed to be helping me here, my friend. 866-991-9927. No, but you summed it up very well, that we're paying these people who sank this company. It's extortion, really. And we had to rush to make those payments. And who's... All right, so when we come back, I also want to get more of your calls in here, but... The flow of conversation, who knew what and when, okay, is pretty interesting sideshow here in this whole thing. Because the story keeps changing day by day. President Obama addressed that, and we're going to dig in a little deeper on that. There's a lot of finger pointing going on right now, the moment. 866-991-9927. Who can make me feel better about this? Why should I not be so darn angry? Who can help me find my zen-like center? That's the big question in the middle of after watching the House Subcommittee on Financial Services hearings all day. That's your job. Helping Nancy Skinner on The Nancy Skinner Show.
Cooperate with Attorney General Cuomo in New York. He has indeed already subpoenaed those names. Does that mean you will be cooperating with that subpoena?
We have not provided those names to the Attorney General.
The question was, will you cooperate with the Attorney General's subpoena?
I'll talk to my general counsel about it, and we will do the right thing.
I just want to protect our employees. So if someone can just assure me that
It's not going to happen. Does the right thing include complying with legal requests from attorneys general?
We always comply. We do everything we are required to do and more with respect to obeying the law.
So that will be a yes? You will supply the names subpoenaed?
We have two different
I'm
things.
Sorry to be so evasive.
Going on,
I just want to
that's easy. You don't have to be evasive. It's really yes or no.
Stop. It's enough. Enough confusion. We heard it. It is. Nancy Skinner on the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. That was Congressman Gary Ackerman. He is hilarious. He was trying to be me. He was trying to do the dumb analogy stuff that I did. I got a little bit of him summing it up. What's the thing, the butter? What's not quite like butter? We'll get that anyways. So he's saying to Ed Liddy, he's asking the question of Ed Liddy and saying, are you going to give us the names? Because Cuomo will subpoena us, will subpoena you if you don't give us those names. And he says we'll do the right thing. So this is the bizarro situation we find ourselves in. Yes, we did. They gave bonuses to the worst performers at AIG who has held this entire global economy hostage, essentially. And now they don't want to reveal those names. Liddy has asked those executives, however, to give back half of what those bonuses were. So if you got over $100,000 in bonuses, you are going to be politely asked to give back half of it. Will we know who does? His great fear is that those people will quit. If they'll give the money back and then they'll quit. Right. Please. They're going to keep the money. They're not, you know, they might quit, but they're certainly, if these are multi-million dollar bonuses, they'll keep the money, but quit. And then it's gone. Okay. And we're on the hook. That's essentially what the deal is. This example, here's my point. This is what happened writ large to our economy. Okay, these guys, these geniuses and wizards out there in Wall Street have held the entire global economy hostage. Okay, so the folks who talk about big government and don't get government involved and all the bad guys were not the regulators. The regulators were AWOL. That's why we're in this. We are going to need regulators on crack to unsort this whole mess out and then to put the new deal into place. And I'm talking about serious regulation, serious, crazy regulation. Let's go to Montgomery Village, Maryland. That sounds like a lovely zen-like place to be right now and talk to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Howdy. I just wanted to comment on the fellow who authorized the retention bonuses. By authorizing them and disregarding the comments about what it would do to the nation, he essentially said, to heck with the nation. You know, we're paying out these bonuses. I don't know, it sounds like treason to me, you know.
Right, well, because, you know, actually you're not far off here, because I'll tell you, the chairman of the committee said to him that they had a prior conversation about this, in which he said, you realize if you go forward with these bonus payments that it's going to jeopardize any political support for continued bailouts, which are the key to really helping get us avoid a depression. So that guy, Ed Liddy, he knew full well that his decision, because he didn't call anybody, he didn't give anyone a heads up. He just had a lawyer send a letter and said, look, these are contracts. They're sacrosanct. We got to do it. That guy, Ed Liddy, right there, knew the implications of what he was doing. And he went ahead and he pulled that trigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, everyone's like, oh, give this guy, Ed Liddy, a break. And they're all due deference to Ed Liddy because he just assumed the, you know, poor Ed Liddy. Poor Ed Liddy, my ass. That guy knew exactly what the decision he was going to, and he knew what the repercussions would be. You know, I mean, you don't get to be a CEO of Allstate if you're an idiot. Or maybe you do, in fact. I don't know. But, Gary, I think you're now he wants confidentiality. Now he's worried that these people are, you know, come on.
He's going to go through the...
You did not help me find my Zen-like center.
No, I knew I wasn't going to. I wish I could, but this is not something that, you know, that I don't think there is a center for this.
Yeah, no. It just keeps the drama. Goes on and on and on with this. So we're going to continue to find some inner peace and figure this whole mess out, the stimulus package. Oh, yeah, remember that? Starting to work, meanwhile. All right, more of your calls coming up, 866-991-9927. That's the number to help Nancy find her Zen Lake Center on the Nancy Skinner Program. The Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, in search of my Zen-like center today after watching the House Subcommittee hearings on financial services. Normally something that would not get me going over the top, generally, not speaking, something that bums me out, but today it did. 866-991-9927. And the reason is, I saw this report in Politico. Some Dems want break in Obama plans. President Obama talked about this as well, that the importance of going forward with the fiscal stimulus and that something like this, he was asked a question about should people quell their anger, because there's a lot of anger out there. But the anger, and we have this, I think we have some sound of him saying that, but that anger out there among the populace also migrates to Congress, right, folks? And then the people in Washington, they get to weird it out about going forward with this, and now they want to pull back on the brakes, as in the fiscal stimulus brakes. And that is the worst possible thing that could happen right now, because the solution to this whole global depression is to keep spending, and spending more than even we've spent to date. But with all the anger focused on bonuses and how the mismanagement of this has happened, there is going to be a pullback in Washington about this situation. There is going to be the Blue Dog Democrats and others. The Republicans already have ammunition. They're calling for Tim Geithner to resign. They are amassing power, political power, as we speak, to try and stop any continued fiscal stimulus. And this is the worst possible thing that could happen. That's why I can't seem to find my Zen-like center, because I know what the solution is, and these guys keep tripping it up. Heidi Shierholz is an economist with the Economic Policy Institute, and she is joining me to talk a little bit about this aspect of what's going on here. And first of all, let me thank you for coming on the show, Heidi.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, I know that you're following all this, obviously, the big picture, small picture stuff. But and you agree that this fiscal stimulus plan is now, it could be jeopardized by these developments?
I think the real jeopardy that we're going to see with this is the probability of future action being reduced. Like, this stimulus bill has passed. It's going forward. The thing that I'm most worried about with this is that what we know right now is the stimulus bill that we have is not going to be big enough. When it was passed, since it's been passed, we've learned that the economic situation is much more dire than we thought even at that time, and that we're really going to need another package. This sort of thing really puts future action in jeopardy. And I was, there's plenty of outrages that happen all the time in mm-hmm. in the world, and I was sort of astounded that the Senate really jumped on this outrage about the AIG bonuses, and then I realized that it's politically savvy for them to do so. If we can make it so, if they can make it that not make the stimulus look bad. It's in their best interest. It's in the best interest of the economy, of the entire economy, of the entire country.
Well, you know, it's just, we know that, but here's the problem. There are people in Congress elected who don't know that. And here's even a bigger problem. They're Democrats, so they should know better. Let's see. So here's, in this article, Politico says, Democrats were muted, with few directly criticizing Obama for being too ambitious, but several lawmakers made clear that they have trouble with Obama's logic that deep economic troubles make it more urgent, not less, to take on expensive projects such as health care and education reform, all these other things. Evan Bayh of Indiana said, everybody has to bring something to the table. That doesn't mean that you have to postpone your aspirations forever, but until we're through this crisis and growth has resumed, there's going to be some belt tightening that's necessary. Now, you're, as a professional economist, Heidi,
that's absolutely entirely wrong.
Right.
It's absolutely wrong-headed.
Correct. Now, we will explain that to people, so let me give you the sentence again. That until we get through this crisis and growth has resumed, there's going to be some belt tightening that's necessary. This guy was actually a candidate for president or had aspirations. Thank God that he's not the economist in chief at this particular moment, if that's his understanding of the particular economic crisis we find ourselves in, right?
So what generally during recessions, governments have two tools in their toolkit. They have monetary policy and fiscal policy. Monetary policy can't save us now. What monetary policy generally looks like is governments will lower interest rates, and then that will stimulate investment, consumers buying big-ticket items, and we can get the economy going again. That can't work now
because
interest rates are already at or near zero.
Zero. Okay.
So we have no wiggle room on monetary policy.
Right.
The only thing left in our toolkit, literally, is government spending. That is the only chance we have to get ourselves out of this recession without losing a decade. So it's absolutely essential. It is what we need right now is responsible, well-targeted, huge deficit spending. Even people who are traditionally deficit hawks, let's talk Larry Summers or, you know, some of the people in Obama's inner circle.
Bill Clinton said this too.
Yep, yeah. People who are historically super, super deficit hawks are saying, fine, right now we have to shelve our concerns about the deficit because the thing that we can do to give the most to our grandchildren right now is to deficit spend, turn this around, get our economy going, get people jobs, get productivity up again, and that is what will leave an important legacy to our kids. Like our grandkids will actually be better off economically if we do a massive deficit spending right now.
Absolutely. Because if we don't, you know, you can take the other side of it. If we don't do massive government spending right now, which is the only tool left, as you said, the only thing that we can do to avoid this going completely off the cliff and having, you thought the Depression, which was an American, pretty Americanized, there were aspects of it that were international. You think that was bad? And how long did it take to climb out of that hole?
it's more
multifaceted than the Depression was.
That's right. And it wasn't until, I mean, people talk about Roosevelt's jobs creation plan, but at the same time that his government spending was going on, there were also massive tax increases at the state level. So net spending actually wasn't big enough. We talk about, critics will say government spending didn't work in the Great Depression. The answer to that is it wasn't tried until World War II. I'm not advocating another war, but what brought us out of the Great Depression was the massive deficit spending we did in preparing for World War II.
Well, and there was, the FDR's stimulus, we've gone over this, his stimulus brought down the unemployment rate, it was like 25%, it started to go down, then he did exactly what Evan Bayh is saying, took his foot off the gas, and then all of a sudden, it was prolonged, and the hesitation, it was like the lost decade in Japan, you know, it took him too long to react. And the war, again, was the juice. It was the steroids that put the spending back on the table and eventually pulled the economy out of of oblivion. But so
and we need to do something like that.
So what do we need to do?
War. Right?
No,
right.
Yes, of course not war. In fact, we have that complicates everything right now because yes. It's a global. I've talked about this. We actually have to help some economies where political unrest because of this global depression could cause us to have to spend on the war, which is the last thing we need to be doing right now is spending on that. We need to be spending on things like energy, healthcare, these things, the essentials of building a long-term economic prosperous economy, which the president talked about today as well. All right, last question, Heidi, and that is what would you like to see? Let's say that these guys regain a sense of 101 fundamental economics and decide to do the right thing. We're talking about another stimulus package along the lines of how much money?
You know, that's a fine question that we'll see in the next couple of months. If this continues to deepen at the pace that it's been deepening, we're going to need something along the lines of the one we have right now. Another $800 billion stimulus package is in the ballpark of what will be required. And to give you an idea, the $800 billion stimulus package they have right now is estimated that it projected that it will create 3.5 million jobs. Right now, we are over 6 million jobs in the hole. So knowing that we are nowhere near the bottom of this thing yet, you can sort of see what we're going to need to fill that in.
Right. Yeah, the political support for just that may have just evaporated.
Yeah, and that is why it's important to get on top of this AIG thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Trying to do that, Heidi Shierlotz of the Economic Policy Institute. Thank you for being so very concise and clear about that.
Great.
We'll have you back time and time again to say that same thing that everybody
okay.
wants to hear. Thanks
anytime.
So much. You bet.
All right. Have a good one.
That's great. That's Heidi Shierlotz. That's the point, guys. That's exactly why, Ed, you should have not paid those bonuses. That's what we're saying. Because we got a lot of work to do, and the public is going to be angry, and we're not going to be able to do our job. That means we're all going down, you selfish SOB. That's the problem. And no, I'm... apparently have not connected with my Zen-like center at this moment. I'm going to keep trying, though. 866-991-9927 is the number if you want to help me. Help me. Help me help myself on the Nancy Skinner Show.
President, a new round of bonuses from these contracts are coming out. What could you say to the American public to quell the anger? Because people are angry about this new round that's coming out. More bonuses are said to be coming for AIG executives.
Well, I don't want to quell anger. I think people are right to be angry. I'm angry. What I want us to do, though, is channel our anger in a constructive way. And the most important thing we can do right now is stabilize the financial system, get flowing, credit flowing again to businesses and consumers, and make sure that we change how these businesses operate so that they don't put us in a situation in which when things go bad, the taxpayers have to foot the bill, and when things go good, folks are getting not just $6 million bonuses, but $30 or $40 million bonuses. Now, keep in mind, I think it's very important to remind ourselves that there are a whole bunch of folks now who are feigning outrage about these bonuses that a year ago, or 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, said, well, we should never meddle in these compensation plans. These are the best and the brightest. They know what they're doing. That's part of the market. And now suddenly they're outraged. The point that I've been trying to make consistently has been that we believe in the free market. We believe in capitalism. We believe in people getting rich. But we believe in people getting rich based on performance and what they add in terms of value and the products and services that they create. And it's appropriate for us to have some regulatory mechanisms in place to ensure that we never have a situation where the government has to step in, or you've got taxpayers who are having to foot the bill for other people's mistakes. That requires some regulatory framework. And my hope is that one of the lessons we learn here is that putting smart regulations in place, oversight, transparency, accountability, those things are not anti-market, they're pro-market. When last year Barney Frank and I worked to allow shareholders to at least cast a non-binding vote on compensation packages, there were some people who attacked us saying government has no business doing that. Well, look, all we're trying to say is you've got to be accountable to somebody. And it's that measure of accountability that I think is part of what has made America strong, and we have to get back to those kinds of values.
And thank God he's the president of the United States. And I'm back on the radio trying to sort this mess out with you on the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. President Obama today, before embarking on a trip to, he's going to be on the Tonight Show tonight. First president, I think, in office to ever be on with Jay Leno on the Tonight Show. And he's doing a town hall out in California, which is what he needs to do. So here's what he said. Okay, oh, he was asked about quelling the anger. Certainly a lot of anger out there. I'm feeling it myself today. Stabilize the markets, get the credit flowing again, but then change how we operate, okay? And to the critics in the GOP, to those who believe in that the markets are a godlike, perfectly functioning instrument, he said regulations aren't anti-market, they're pro-market. I would contend that the policies of the last 8 years and of the conservative ideologues are socialist, because what they do is they rack up a big Ponzi scheme, take a lot of money, push it off on the taxpayer, take their check, put it in their pocket, go, thank you very much, and then they just say, you know, let the market work. And then, again, we have to go back into office, get handed this dump heap, sort it out, pay down the deficit. Bill Clinton had to do the same darn thing. And then once again, you know, after a while, they're on the outside, the opposition yelling and barking at the Democrats. They get their turn in power, and they do it all over again. We have to stop that vicious cycle. Let's go to Kel, because Kel in Woodland Hills thinks she can help me find my inner zen-like center.
Hi, Nancy. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, you bet.
Oh, I'm there? Okay. Well, I'm a pastor out in Woodland Hills, and you just, I heard your plea, and I needed to call and answer, and I hope this might help a little. You know, yes, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, I'm so in empathy with you, but to that, I'm not just sitting and taking it. I'm working with my congregation, and we've started a movement called From the Ground Up, and we have created our own yellow pages, so to speak, looking to hire within the church to give any, you know, side jobs or odd jobs or things that need to be done. We have started a coin program to help get cards, and that's been, just in coins, we've brought in a couple $100 this month that we've been distributing out in little cards, you know, to get people food and stuff, and mm-hmm. we've started this diary of sharing with people the inspirational stories we're doing to reach out and to build an infrastructure from the ground up built on compassion.
Well, I'm all for that. I am. You're just further than I am right now.
I know you are, and maybe it will help you with your inner zen just knowing that that's happening.
That there is a place out there where people are starting to, like, take a deep breath and do the right thing.
Yes. As we're all going through this together, we're all frustrated listening to this. We're not waiting for our leaders. We're acting on our own. And just know that's out there, and that might help take a step in the right direction.
Good.
For you.
Well, I do think that that's really important, Kel. And I think it's important because, you know what, as we rebuild this mess, we need those new connections out there, people sort of reengaged in what's happening around them, so it's not so darn hard to get through, you know. Turn off the the boob tube, Big Love, or whatever stupid show you watch, and do the real thing, you know?
You got it.
All right,
you got it.
Thank you. I'm already feeling better, so thank
you. Well, there you go.
See?
There
already.
You go.
That's
what you asked for, and I had to respond.
It's great. I appreciate that. You can hear it in my voice, can't you? A little better. A little bit better. I feel better because we have a president who gets this. Can you imagine going through all this and having George Bush in the White House? Like, this is so complicated. That just knowing that at least our president gets it makes me feel better. Okay? Bush were there, not so much. Hey, let's talk about a better subject coming up here for a second. Oh, it's the anniversary of the war in Iraq. That's right. That's what we got coming up next, right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. Try and get our minds off of the anger in Washington, D.C. going on over the AIG, the House Financial Services Subcommittee financial meeting that's caused so much anger. We're going to get back to it, don't worry, because there are events ongoing. And we're going to take our attention on the Nancy Skinner Show over to yet another subcommittee. This was a Senate subcommittee meeting that we weren't paying any attention to. We're trying to lighten things up here on the Nancy Skinner Show, right? 866-991-9927. So why not take a look at the Senate subcommittee meeting on military suicide? There you go. That's what you want to do when you're trying to lighten things up and find your Zen-like center. But you know what? The reality is tomorrow marks the seventh year anniversary of the war in Iraq. Believe it or not, I bet a date that probably will go, not get the kind of attention that it deserves because of the situation, the financial global meltdown and the AIGs of the world. So we wanted to take a minute and to say, okay, folks, still there. President Obama, of course, having recently announced his plans on Iraq to be out within 18 months or so with a retention force left behind, and then by 2011 have zero troops in Iraq. That was a plan. We talked about it, a week ago or so? Who even knows anymore? But tomorrow there might be a little bit of coverage. Maybe. Who knows? So we thought we'd spend a little bit of time talking about this, the real situation of the real consequences of war in Iraq, not just for soldiers there, but for families and everybody associated with back here. Former Colonel Anne Wright, 29-year U.S. Army and Army Reserves veteran, who was also a former U.S. diplomat, resigned in March of 2003 because she was opposed to the invasion of the war in Iraq, and has gone on to do great work in Afghanistan and to try and do everything within her power to talk about what we did wrong and how to fix the broken situation. She is the author of the book Dissent, Voices of Conscience, and has just released another report, a report called Report on Sexual Assault in the Military. And Colonel Wright joins us now, where she was attending the Senate Subcommittee on Military Suicides. Wow, that's a lot of dark stuff going on there, Colonel.
Well, it is. War is a dark stuff, and the results and the costs of war toward the people that the United States has invaded and occupied, and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis killed, hundreds of thousands of Afghans, if not killed, wounded, and certainly the cost to our own military, to include military suicides and extraordinary levels of post-traumatic stress disorder, are things that we as a community will have to be dealing with for, you know, the next generation.
Mm. So, you know, it's a topic I really haven't focused too much on. Why don't you tell us, I was on another hearing all day following that. What are the numbers as it relates to military suicide? Do we have percentages? Do we have numbers? What were they saying today at the hearing?
Yeah, today for the Army, they've said that from the year 2004 to 2008, the number of suicides in the Army have doubled from nine per 100,000 up to 20 per 100,000 in the Army are committing suicide. The other services have not seen that dramatic of an increase, but they have seen increases in the numbers of suicides. And it is indicative of the inability to cope with what these men and women have seen and done. I've been particularly concerned about the issue of suicides or women whose deaths are now being attributed as being suicides, and yet there's some real questions of whether or not the women committed suicide or perhaps they were murdered after they had been sexually assaulted.
Oh, really? Okay, there's some question as to that, huh? That it doesn't get accurately investigated?
Indeed, and many of the family members, there are 13 women who are in the Iraq theater and one in the Afghanistan theater that the military says have committed suicide, and yet when you talk to the families of many of those women, they say, my daughter, my mother would not have committed suicide, and the incidents surrounding the deaths of these women are very suspicious and certainly need, in my opinion, to be further investigated by the military.
Now, Colonel Wright, Secretary of Defense Gates today, just an hour ago or so, issued a press release saying that they hope to end the policy, called Stop Loss Policy, which compels troops to be held beyond their enlistment dates. They're going to start cutting back on that this summer, and by 2011 have completely eliminated the Stop Loss Policy. I guess on some 13,000 soldiers, their time's, they're up, they're forced to continue serving. It's a lot of people say a backdoor draft. You enlist, you do your time, and they keep you there. How do you feel about that as it relates to helping? I mean, is that leading to, you think, the increase? It seems obvious to me that it would be that someone, there's just desperation. You think your time is up, you're still there, you're stuck over in Iraq, and it seems like no way out.
Yeah, those sorts of things. The Stop Loss program has certainly increased the stress on men and women that are in the military. And this backdoor drafting was a real clever way that the Bush administration circumvented having to institute a draft, which would have spread out equitably over, well, if it were implemented properly, equitably all over the socioeconomic strata of our country, so that everyone would feel the pinch if this really is a war that the country wants to support. But instead, no, they didn't. And they used another little clever device of privatizing military, where you have now in Iraq, you have more private contractors in Iraq than you have U.S. military servicemen and women. So that's another way. You pay high prices, get somebody to serve as a civilian, and you don't have to implement the draft, which would have infuriated, I think, the American public, and we would have seen a dramatic decrease in the acceptability of the war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, if the true... The costs were felt by all of society. So, Colonel Wright, we're speaking with former Colonel Ann Wright about Iraq, and I don't want to forget about Afghanistan. That was launched a year prior to Iraq. The war, I believe, was justified based on 9/11, going after bin Laden, who remains at large. What is your feeling at this date? It was the neglected war, if you will, but having said all that, what is your feeling about the progress in Afghanistan and the shift in focus from Iraq to Afghanistan?
Well, Nancy, you know, I actually went to Afghanistan in December of 2001 and was on the small team that reopened the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, Afghanistan, that had been closed for 12 years. And I felt that it was appropriate to take action against those that we felt had perpetrated 9/11. And when the Bush administration, much to my surprise, decided to put the CIA paramilitary forces into Afghanistan and then followed by the U.S. military, then I volunteered to go help reopen that embassy. But for those of us that were there in those early days, we knew that the window of opportunity to help the people of Afghanistan who had suffered so strongly, so badly in 25 years of war with first the Soviet and then the Afghan warlords fighting among themselves and causing such great destruction in their own country. But the time for, if the United States was going to help in terms of helping rebuild schools, get medical clinics, roads, trying to help the people themselves, the window of opportunity was going to be pretty short, because the history of the Afghan people is that no matter what the purpose was of this invasion in the eyes of the invader, and as much as they would try to portray it in the most benevolent way for the Afghan people, invaders don't last long in Afghanistan.
Right.
And you
got some crazy factions, Waziristan, those guys wearing like dark stuff and carrying swords and all these different outrageous tribes, right, that have time to amass and mess up whatever coordinated effort there is at a stable government. Is that essentially?
Well, and you just, the average Afghan, the history of just plain old, the average Afghan person is that they don't like invaders in their country. And whether it's the guys and gals that whose only source of income are growing the poppies, which the United States and other countries, you know, we're hell-bent to weather to less eradicate the poppy fields, except there's no alternative. And in the 8 years the U.S. has been there, the poppy crop has actually increased every single year. There are a lot of cultural and dynamics in Afghanistan that we in the West really just don't understand at all. And for us to have the arrogance to say that just our mere presence there and sending in more troops is going to resolve issues there, to me is very short-sighted. And I would urge the Obama administration not to send in more troops, but to be amenable to the negotiations that have to go on between the various Afghan factions. I would also encourage them not to continue this increase in the number of drone strikes that are being made on the Afghan and Pakistani border, much less in the country of Pakistan. It's only destabilizing Pakistan.
Well, yeah, I guess the point there is that we need to get to the terror network, to Bin Laden, to his people. But it's causing, I see your point, that it's causing those people to retrench, and that there's some blowback. I'm throwing this. We're talking about Afghanistan, Colonel Wright. I'm up against a break here. I just wanted to thank you for coming on. We got some developments coming in with the whole financial global meltdown. But thank you for joining us on the eve of the 7-year anniversary in the war in Iraq, and for always doing the right thing. You are a profile in courage. You were. We need more men and women like you in the military. So thanks
again. Thank you, Nancy.
Anytime.
Thanks so much.
Always, Colonel Ann Wright, former Colonel Ann Wright. On the, can you believe it, seventh year anniversary of the war in Iraq, longer than World War II. Speaking of depressions. Okay. Oh, there we go. We're going to come back, and there's updates. There was a big fight. There was a big cat fight. Back to the my favorite House subcommittee meeting. More developments, believe it or not. Breaking. I'm following them, even while talking about the war in Iraq. We're multitasking on the Nancy Skinner Show.
What I need. Thank you, Chairman Kanjorski, Ranking Member Garrett, and members of the subcommittee. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you as the representatives of the largest shareholder we have, the American people. My name is Edward Liddy. 6 months ago, I came out of retirement to help my country. At the government's request, I've had the duty and extraordinary challenge of serving as chairman and chief executive officer of American International Group, or AIG. I speak to you today on behalf of the 116,000 AIG employees around the world who are remarkably united around one simple belief. When you owe someone money, you pay that money back. I'm sure we all share that belief. I believe that you and I also share a common agenda today to clean up the mess at AIG and in the process help get the American economy moving again. Let me speak directly to the situation at AIG that has sparked the nation's outrage over the past several days. No one knows better than I that AIG has been the recipient of generous amounts of government aid. We are acutely aware not only that we must be good stewards of the public funds we have received, but that the patience of the America's taxpayers is indeed wearing thin. Where that patience is especially thin is on the question of compensation. I am personally mindful both of the environment in which we are operating and the President's call for a more restrained compensation system. At the same time, we are essentially operating AIG and on behalf of the American taxpayer.
Oh, thank you very much. Doesn't that make you feel better to know that AIG is in service to you, the American taxpayer? It is the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. I can't help it. I know we have an anniversary of Iraq and a lot going on. I'm beyond myself on this whole AIG story. So New York Times is live blogging the events of it. I don't actually have a television in the studio. I will. But I've been sort of following it as it goes along. Even as he said that was Ed Liddy, the new chairman of AIG, post-crisis, post-meltdown. And even as he said, we are acting on your behalf, he predicted at about 4:57 that many executives, employees might resign rather quickly given the political climate and the giant bullseye painted on AIG's logo. Many employees, he said, might stay a little longer, return the bonuses, but resign because nobody loves them, everybody hates them. I'm going to eat some worms. I mean, these are multi-million dollar bonuses. They're not going to return them and then resign. Are you kidding me? They're going to keep the money and let the government find a way to get their hands on it, which we've talked about all week, taxing it. That was brought up, that they're going to tax this thing. You know, it's really insane about this is that given all of this outrageous behavior, there's a side debate going on about they want now Geithner. This came up, you know, who knew what when, and when Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, knew what was going on. There was actually an exchange during this hearing about Geithner. And so, let's see, he said that Liddy and Geithner had a healthy exchange with Mr. Geithner relating how rough this would be for the American public to swallow. You think? Huh. At the urging of lawmakers, Mr. Liddy promised to furnish more details about his contacts with Tim Geithner. So then there's this online trading group called InTrade, okay? And there's a futures contract that pays out if Mr. Geithner is out of his job by June 30th. Dealbook has more on this. So who's going to get fired? These guys get retention bonuses? And they're going to fire Geithner, the guy who's coming in trying to fix this mess? Are you kidding me? That's where your futures contract is? Just to make it even more insane. 866-991-9927. There's more. Wait. There's more to this saga when we come back on the Nancy Skinner Show.
I'm going to make this two more questions. Go ahead.
$100,000 from AIG.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
You received $100,000 from AIG during the campaign. How do you feel about those contributions today? Do you plan to do anything about it? And at least one member of Congress has now called for your Secretary of the Treasury to resign. Your thoughts?
Well, I have complete confidence in Tim Geithner and my entire economic team. Understand, as I said before, Tim Geithner didn't draft these contracts with AIG. There has never been a Secretary of the Treasury, except maybe Alexander Hamilton, right after the Revolutionary War, who's had to deal with the multiplicity of issues that Secretary Geithner's having to deal with all at the same time. And, you know, he is doing so with intelligence and diligence. Nobody's working harder than this guy. He is making all the right moves in terms of playing a bad hand. And what we need to be doing is making sure that we are providing him the support that he needs in order to work through all these problems so that we're able to deal with them more effectively in the future.
Complete confidence, President Obama expressed in his Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner. Complete confidence. It is the Nancy Skinner Show where you can have complete confidence that I will regurgitate for you all this complex financial stuff and make it really, really simple stuff. 866-991-9927. To the best of my ability, I need to take an oath. Complete confidence means something in political rhetoric. This, as Tim Geithner's under fire for his role in, which is funny to me, for his role in preventing this, these AIG executives from looting the Treasury in time, apparently, with limited information. Because what we're finding out today at the subcommittee, House Financial Services subcommittee, is that it was Ben Bernanke talking to Ed Liddy all along, and that he was not, Ed Liddy said, talking directly to the Treasury Secretary, assuming that it was Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chair, who was keeping Geithner in the loop. Now, so there's a lot of discussion going on in the hearings there. In trade, it's an online trading thing, like a commodities thing. You can bet on certain possibilities of different things happening. They have a futures contract on how long it will be before Tim Geithner is fired as a result of this, which is really, think about this. Think about the irony. Legalized betting. Okay, is essentially what it is. A futures contract about a Treasury Secretary who is doing the best he can given a situation in which he was handed essentially legalized betting with taxpayer dollars. That's exactly the weirdness that is going on. And then there's an AP report about this whole thing that the president, he used the word complete confidence. Robert Gibbs had used that word when asked the question yesterday. And it says, those, of course, are statements that wouldn't need to be made if Geithner's status were clear. Not just the president's confidence, but his complete confidence can be a well-worn political signal that the person allegedly enjoying it should start circulating a resume. And so AP is pointing out that Tim Geithner is the one in trouble. Now, Politico is reporting that there is a circular firing squad going on among Democrats as they try to play defense with this AIG football. Senator Robert Menendez, a Democrat of New Jersey, has blamed Tim Geithner for letting bailed out insurance giant AIG pay those bonuses. Saying he wrote a letter 2 weeks ago warning him of such a possibility. As the president pointed out in that clip, dude, the guy has no deputies. He's had hearings ongoing to get him some support and background, and they're holding up his nominees because of taxes. You know, did they pay taxes on their nanny 20 years ago? He is the secretary treasury, with no help, very little staff, who's taken on a set of circumstances that no one has ever seen, worse than the Depression. And he was in conversation. That was reported earlier. Even Ed Liddy said he tried to get him. They had a healthy exchange about how hard this would be for the American public to swallow. Perhaps should he have gone to the president sooner? I don't know the exact timeline. I'm sure we'll find this out. And said, let's just go public before this happens with it. Maybe so. But like President Obama said, you know, I screwed up when he made a mistake. We said, I forget what the context of was. What was that? That seemed like a decade ago. Didn't it? When President Obama got on all the networks and said I screwed up when he said something. 1-866-991-9927. Don't get confused. Don't let them, I heard Rush Limbaugh talking about Geithner. Don't let them push this back on Tim Geithner. If he found out a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and this is not about Tim Geithner. This is about what these bandits at AIG knew they did, and I'm not giving Ed Liddy a pass because he just took over. He was told by the chairman of this committee what the fallout would be if he went ahead with these bonuses. So Bernanke wasn't talking to Geithner. He finds out. He tries to talk him down or whatnot. They come back and send a letter saying, sorry, we paid him. Too late. And now everyone's going back to Geithner. Uh-uh. I'm not buying it. This is what you call this? This is just a big pink elephant distraction from the real issue here, which is that essentially without the regulatory mechanisms in place, these guys looted the Treasury for 8 years. Okay, let's start talking about George Bush and these folks and how they allowed this to happen. Don't go after Geithner, who's been on the job for 6 weeks. Let's go to Los Angeles and talk to Steve. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I'm great. Everything's just peachy.
Yeah, sounds like it. About AIG, they were headed into bankruptcy. And if it hadn't been for the bailout, that's where they'd be. In a bankruptcy, every contract is broken and is null and void. So these crybabies saying they're under contract to get paid doesn't mean a thing. Because now we own 80% of that company, the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as recovering the $165 million, they said they still have to pay them $30 billion in the bailout. So they said they were going to take the $165 million out of that money to recover it. I say take that and don't even give them the $30 billion. End story.
Well, you know what I would say?
They're working for us now, and so they're going to have to make do like the rest of us do. And instead of getting all this constant in fluctuation of money to turn things around. They're going to have to work for it.
Well, I would even go further than that, Steve. I would say that this is clear proof that this company needs to go into receivership because I don't trust this guy, Ed Liddy. I don't trust him, you know,
I don't either.
At all. I don't care if he just stepped up to the plate. Oh, he's doing a great American a service to the American taxpayer. You know what?
Right.
Please. You know, I don't trust him. He went ahead. He was told if you do this, there's going to be fallout far beyond, you know, your company. That's going to affect the whole economy, the markets, psychology, the ability of Congress to be able to do what they need to do. And he went ahead and did it. And then they didn't even have the guts to send a letter to, Paul, the chairman, what's his name, whatever, the chairman of this guy's going to become famous now. He didn't even have the guts to send him a letter and say, we're going to do it. No, they did it quietly. They did it. They paid, they wrote the checks, and then sent a letter after the deed was done that they were going to do it. So,
right, and how dumb do they think we are?
Pretty dumb, I would guess.
My company did the same thing, giving bonuses. I won't mention the name of it, but they gave bonuses to the management, and then they came back and told us, well, we had to do this because we need to keep them around. And all of us said, keep around for what? Let them go.
Right, right. Retention bonuses.
That was their excuse, and it didn't mean a thing. They didn't give us anything, but, you know, they gave the management bonuses.
Because
so
what would happen if they quit?
Racket.
If they quit, oh, my goodness.
It's a corporate racket, and so they quit. Oh, well.
Yeah, so that would be the best thing that would have happened. The guys sunk AIG. Quitting.
There are plenty of people out there looking for work.
That's what Ed Liddy said.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. You and I can go into business, Steve, selling credit default swaps for $10 million a year.
There you go.
No, that's it. Think about it. Just take it out an SBA loan and do that. That's what he said. The risk was just too large that these people would quit. He honest to God said that. So I think he does think we're pretty darn stupid. I think receivership. At this point, which is like nationalization of banks, receivership, because they're not a bank, so they're an insurance company with a hedge fund on top. They should be booted. Money taxed, whatever way we get it back, and Ed Liddy gone, and whoever made the whole structure that made these decisions. If we own 80% of it, I could run AIG. Wouldn't be nearly as fun as being here with you. But, you know, what the heck. I feel more qualified than Ed Liddy at this point. 866-991-9927. We have one more segment. A little bit more sound on this. Continuing saga as AIG turns.
Return that money. Give it back, at least 50% of it, and for the leadership group, 100% of it. The issue I never got a chance a moment ago to fully explain the legal side of it, and I'm not one that hides behind the legal aspect of this. What we can't do is have a group of individuals or have an event which causes AIGFP to get into a situation of cross default. If it does that, it will be bankruptcy, and it won't be a very good picture.
Take it out of your profits down the road. Eat it now. It's a lot sweeter now than it's going to be later, because you got legislation coming down the pike that they're going to call it, I can't believe it's not waterboarding.
Mm-hmm. What I'd like to do, sir, is see how much leadership comes from the AIGFP people in terms of returning those bonuses. My fear is the damage is done.
Don't hold your breath.
We will get the bulk of that money back. They will return it, but they will return it with their resignations.
Oh, no.
And we do, in fact, run the risk of that business being much more difficult to wind down than we ever anticipated. That is not a concession of defeat. We'll do everything we can to make sure that business gets wound down professionally, quickly, and efficiently.
Yeah. Ed Liddy, we're going to wind down that business efficiently and quickly. Oh, my. That's got to be the best cut of the day. Gary Ackerman, new hero for Nancy Skinner on The Nancy Skinner Show. I got some other sound from him. I didn't get to all of it today, but this guy, the beauty of these things is that new celebrities are born, new congresspeople during each thing. Gary Ackerman out of, I believe he is a New York congressman, was very colorful today. Who would have thought on the House Financial Services Committee that you'd have people like Gary Ackerman? 866-991-9927. That was so good I want to play it again just really quickly, because this was like the moment. The guy's trying to explain. This is really a key moment. Ed Liddy's trying to say why he, knowing he was forewarned that this would cause the sort of fire that it did, why he had to do it, because the risks were so great. And this Gary Ackerman, the congressman, was challenging him, saying, eat it. He's like, eat it. It's going to be worse. And this guy was just as honest as could be. And the niceties were gone at this point. And I want to hear it again. This is fun.
Return that money. Give it back. At least 50% of it. And for the leadership group, 100% of it. The issue I never got a chance a moment ago to fully explain the legal
this
side
is
of
Ed Liddy.
It. And I'm not one that hides behind the legal aspect.
We just had a lawyer send you a letter.
What we can't do is have a group of individuals or have an event which causes AIGFP to get into a situation of cross default. If it does that, will be bankruptcy, and it won't be a very good picture.
Take it out of your profits down the road. Eat it now. It's a lot sweeter now than it's going to be later. Because you got legislation coming down the pike that they're going to call it, I can't believe it's not waterboarding.
What I'd like to do, sir, is see how much leadership comes from the AIGFP people.
How much
leadership?
In terms
of returning those bonuses. My fear is the damage is done.
Oh, no.
That we will get the bulk of that money back. They will return it, but they will return it with their resignations.
Oh, no.
And we do, in fact, run the risk of that business being much more difficult to wind down than we ever anticipated. That is not a concession of defeat.
We'll do everything we can to make sure that that business gets wound down professionally, quickly, and efficiently.
We're on it. We are on it. We're on our best. We're going to try and get that wound down without screwing you any further. This is essentially what he said. Isn't that funny? My fear is the damage is done. The damage is done, and you're like, well, what? When you say damage is done, he's saying what he meant by that was that these guys are going to quit. That's the damage that was that was the big risk, that the guys who sunk AIG would quit. The guys who bankrupted it, the symbol of fast money, those guys would quit. That's what he's worried about. That was the big fear. Steve, what do you think about Ed Liddy?
Hello, this is Stan in Shell Beach.
Oh, I'm sorry, Stan. I have you down as Steve, but go ahead.
Okay, that's okay. I just wanted to say that it's not the companies that did these things. It's individuals who did these things. It's the executives and the boards of directors. And they knew exactly what they were doing when they lobbied Congress with billions of dollars to get these laws that would have protected us overturned. And I think that it's Congress that should be taking the suicide pill or, you know, falling on their sword for what the mess that they have.
Congress. Why Congress?
What's that?
Well, you said Congress should be killing themselves?
Yeah.
Why?
The lobbyists from these companies went to Congress with these proposals to overturn the laws that protected us for some 70 years.
Oh, you mean the Glass-Steagall Act. Okay.
No. There's a whole list of them. Uh-huh. If you read Sold Out, the report by Rob Wiseman, I think it is.
Yeah. I had him on the show the other day. I've got 142 pages of it sitting by my bedside.
Right. And so there's 12 laws, I think, that were overturned through the lobbying efforts of these companies, spending something like $5.1 billion, four lobbyists for every congressman, to get these laws that protected us overturned and to allow this to happen.
All right. Yeah, I hear it now. I hear what you're making.
In Congress,
yeah,
who knew exactly and who were running around with their hair on fire saying, don't do this, here's what's going to happen. But the payola was too big, and these guys took the money and ran with it and left us holding the bag.
Yep, you're right. You got it. Thanks, Steve. Let's see. Dana, you got a quick thought?
Hey, hi, Nancy.
Hi, Dana. Almost out of time here. Just got a couple seconds.
What's that? Oh, just a couple seconds?
Yeah, we're almost out of time. I wanted to get your last thought on Gary. You said something about Gary Ackerman.
Yeah, Gary Ackerman actually is fantastic. He's the one that has really been outspoken. He really berated a lot of the SEC members for not, you know, getting into the Bernie Madoff situation. And it's just, you know, we have these organizations, regulators, and everybody that's, you know, supposed to be in place to protect everything, and yet it seems like no one is, you know, basically doing their job. There's no checks and balances. Not anybody, but Gary's, you know, that will yell at people. And it's just, I think that sometimes that's necessary. That, you
He's
know,
great.
Gotta, you know, put on the carpet and, you know.
He is my new hero. His candor, his bluntness. So.
Oh, he was fantastic. I actually sent him a fax after he was, you know, dealing with the SEC, and he responded back to me. And, you know, he's a great guy. He, you know, wants everybody to support him. So please support Gary Ackerman.
All right. He's my new hero. Let's get him on the show. That's what I'm going to try and do. That's my new goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You bet. We'll do it. Dana, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We're out of time for this portion of the broadcast day. That means tomorrow I'll be back for 3 hours, and I'll have more sound. Believe it or not, I've taped what I missed while I was here with you today. And there will be other news, I'm sure. And we'll talk about it all right here on the Nancy Skinner Show.